This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This weekend, some of the Michigan protests that followed the murder of George Floyd followed a pattern also visible in other cities across the United States. Peaceful throughout the day, less so at night. With us now is D'Amico Williams, an organizer with the Metro Detroit Political Action Network. D'Amico Williams, good to hear your voice.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Will you tell us about your goals for Friday afternoon's march and rally?
Yes, the goal for our rally, it was for the city of Detroit to come together and to unify among the situation. We all saw the tape. We all are upset, and we all have to express ourselves in a way that is civilly, moral, and just, and also demand action for justice. This was inspired by a Black woman, one of my colleagues. She was talking to me about the situation, and I just got upset and frustrated. And I was like, I'm not taking this no more. So I composed a flyer. I said, meet in front of the police station. I contacted all my friends, family, everyone that I knew. And I also worked with my colleagues that blasted the flyer. That flyer trended over 24 hours with 600 and something interested replies and people getting more information to come. When the rally was set for Friday at 4 o'clock, we already had 100 people waiting for us at 3 o'clock. Councilwoman Mary Sheffield, our local council person, has started off the rally. We still see people coming in and droves, you know, the Detroit Police Department, they have accommodated by opening up the parking lots. They opened up the street. They allow protesters to take the street because they wanted to show solidarity, that they felt that it was wrong, and they wanted to show this community how much that they care and how they wanted to allow them to get their voices across, to be loud and clear.
You've been involved in activism for some time. Did you feel like you saw
15 years.
Right. Did you feel like you saw a lot of familiar faces, or were there some new folks?
No, I saw new faces. I saw people that had never been to protest before. I saw people who genuinely cared. They saw the flyer and they wanted to come out and show their support and solidarity. And with the African-American frontline organizers that were speakers, that were in the front to tell people what they could do to get involved, how they can use their collective efforts at obtaining justice, and how to work with organizations that's already been doing the work, long established, and just need your help with a boost, your donation, or your volunteerism to make those efforts come alive.
This is not the easiest time to organize direct action given the public health emergency that's going on. What kind of precautions were you able to take in terms of COVID prevention?
Oh, well, the Detroit Police Department was able to give out personal protection equipment to the attendees. We were able to have some community volunteers bring masks and gloves. People that came there already had masks. They already have their protection. But the problem with the rallies is that you got so huge of people, the 6 feet rule is not going to work because we have so many people that are coming in and they're filing. We tried to do a picket line with the 6 feet distance. That did not work. We tried to do a march, or one of our marches up Woodward Avenue, and that was just too hard to do. Everyone is excited. We don't care about no coronavirus. We care about human lives. Human lives are important. And if it's not from the coronavirus killing Black Americans, it's also the hands of racist police and those that are trigger happy that are killing Black people. So what is it going to give when it comes to African-Americans, where we have to stand up and declare that we are essential, our lives matter, and that we have to make the changes in policy and our government and also in society to understand that all human lives, Black, Latino, Asian, even white, that we have to come together, because after George Floyd, people are sick and tired. It's not language of the unheard. It's language of people that are sick and tired of seeing open displays of murder right on TV.
You know, just in terms of the Friday afternoon activity, you know, when the sun was still up, how would you say you and the other organizers felt about how the event went?
we felt elated. We felt that, you know, this was a situation where we finally got people together. We were all able to come to a consensus and to agree for the first time in American life and society that people from all walks of life, all races, all colors, all nationalities, that this was wrong and we must demand justice and that we got to do whatever steps collectively to demand action be taken to arrest those police officers and to bring them to justice and to lock them away for what they did to George Floyd. But also, we were very surprised to see how many people that were still coming out and people that were sad that they missed Friday because they didn't know how it was going to turn out because they were fear of the coronavirus. There was fears of the governor's stay home order, but also there was people that did not give a damn because this was the situation they wanted to be in and they wanted to show their solidarity with African Americans. It just sucks because when the nighttime came after 8 o'clock, when everything was done, there were still protesters in the street, peaceful protesters that were agitated by Detroit Police Department, and they were tear gassed and made to disperse. But for the Detroit Police, they are the ones that caused the most mayhem. They should have stood down. They should respect the protesters' right to demonstrate and assemble peacefully within our city. And also to the African-American residents and such that were not able to get involved and now scared for their lives. You know what I'm saying? As a Black organizer, as a Black person myself, and as a resident homegrown in the city of Detroit, it was perfectly okay for them to demonstrate their moral outrage and to make their voices clear. And we tried to provide that.
Is it possible that some of the people who were responsible for property damage and other things were people who wanted to be allies in the movement, but just saw tactics differently?
That is very unclear because, I mean, there's people that you don't even know that are joining, but you don't know what their true intention is. You know, if you want to be a white ally to Black people, first is listening. Second is hearing their story. Third is asking, what can I do? What can I offer? What can I help with? You know, and also respecting the culture, the struggle, the historical relevance, and also the mere fact we are all human and that we're trying to work together for a common good of the goal. We're not trying to profit or opportunize or do this for Instagram like or for good news only. Like, we can't go back to that same apathy. So we're going to have to change all of us. We're going to have to change the way that we do things, and we're going to have to think outside the box.
What would you say is different between the mood at these protests and other actions that you've been involved in?
People are mad as hell this time, and they ain't taking no more. There isn't no going in the house. Mm-hmm. This wasn't a one-day rally. We're mad. You know, you hear speeches, and we feel good later, and then we go home. No, this has been the best Detroit has ever been through. 3 to 4 days of constant protesting. Mm-hmm. And people are getting out and they're getting involved and people are linking up and joining within each other and other organizations and adding their hand. This has never happened before in the city of Detroit, of Metro Detroit, perhaps. So what we want to do is we want to foster those actions and we want to take it up to the highest stratosphere. If you're at a protest and you see like-minded people, you know, don't be afraid to talk to them. Get their name, get their number, get their information, you know, hang out with each other, find out where your interest is. And then work together to collaborate. It don't take a team of 2 to 5 to 10 to 100 people. It just takes you and what you're willing to do and what you're willing to sacrifice to make our country better. This is all for our children that have to grow up in a world that hopefully we can eradicate and erase racism, segregation, bias, and also love each other in a unified way.
D'Amico Williams, thank you so much for your time. You take care out there.
Thank you for having me.
D'Amico Williams is an organizer with the Metro Detroit Political Action Network. On the other side of the state, Victor Williams, no relationship, is a community organizer who worked on the Grand Rapids March and a pre-march rally called Speak Through the Mask. He's part of the African American Community Task Force. Victor Williams, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
What was it like in Grand Rapids over the weekend?
Raucous.
Yeah.
It was, it was great weather, but of course, you know, it mirrored what was happening around the rest of the country with these, I call them WWE riots.
Mm-hmm. Could you say more?
Because these are riots that are not grassroots as I see them, particularly here in Grand Rapids. I don't know so much about everywhere else because I'm not there. But being in Grand Rapids and being on the ground here, knowing what's happening, I know that these riots were not homegrown.
The rally that you helped to organize before the march was called Speak Through the Mask. Can you tell us a little bit about why you chose that particular language?
Well, we chose that language because on a day-to-day basis, a lot of people walk around with what we call two faces, walk around with a mask on in your day-to-day life, not necessarily being true to themselves or speaking truly who they are. So we've got racists walking around amongst us every day. We got people who are not racist who walk around and deal with racism on a daily basis, white, black, Asian, Latino, what have you. And so Speak Through the Mask language came about, of course, as a double entendre because we have COVID at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, come out and speak through the mask, speak through that alternate ideal of yourself that you have, that ultimate personality. Speak through the mask and speak about the things that you see, what's truly on your heart. Really, we are inviting our brothers and sisters across all platforms, white, black, Asian, Latino, to come out and speak to racism, to come out and speak against police brutality, to speak against the system of racism that we have here in America.
Like we said, the march in Grand Rapids, several thousand people were out in the street. What was your reaction later in the evening when you saw that things had taken a destructive turn?
I was very disappointed that that is what had taken place, but I wasn't totally surprised as I saw these different factions coming into the city, rolling into our downtown. Our event ended at 6 o'clock. The silent march began at 6 o'clock. The silent march was actually put together by three young ladies who I handed the mic to allow them to address the crowd, to lead them on the march. And 30 minutes after the march was gone from Rosa Parks Circle in downtown Grand Rapids, you could see these factions moving into downtown Grand Rapids from the west. And I was wondering who these people were because you could see that it was just an entirely different energy, different clothing, military dress, you know, like really totally coming prepared for combat. They were not the crowd that was there all day.
Can I ask, what was the racial composition that you saw developing later in the day?
Sure. Like these people that showed up at 6:45, 7 o'clock in the evening, they were white. And, you know, they didn't come with signs. They came with, you know, their military grade face masks. They came with milk jugs. They came with combat boots on. You know, they weren't comfy. They weren't relaxed. They were not the same people that were enjoying the rally all day. And they were not the crowd that had left 30, 45 minutes earlier that were a part of the march. They were there for an entirely different purpose.
Victor, could you tell us a little bit about what the African American Community Task Force does?
The African American Community Task Force is a coalition of organizations and individuals that are working together to solidify the African-American community on all platforms, whether that's arts and culture, health and humanities, education, politics. It's just a group of people that have come together to address those issues for African-American people.
Do you feel like there will be repercussions for future protests in Grand Rapids because of the way things went after dark?
I think that the repercussions are going to be on the citizens every day, as right now we're under a mandated curfew right now.
Mm-hmm.
So from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m., no one can move around. The people that did this, they don't live here, so they're not under the curfew. But the people who live here are now suffering the consequences of those actions. And yeah, of course, if anyone tries that again, I'm sure the police and, you know, the the military and, you know, everybody's on standby waiting for it and prepared for it now. So now there's going to be harsh consequences.
What changes do you hope will come from the protests that have been happening both in Michigan and other places in the country?
Well, we're hoping we can put an end to the racist systems that we have been suffering under here in America for hundreds of years. Hopefully we can come together and begin to break those systems down. That's the hopes that we can have, that we can take this energy that we have for protests and we can sit down with so what I've done is, what we did Saturday is I reached out to my friends that are elected officials, state reps and county commissioners and city commissioners to come out and speak, and let's join hands and form an alliance that can work on these issues outside of protesting. We can take that energy and put it into changing some laws and things of that nature that will help deconstruct the system that we're living in. I think that it's a tragedy what's going on with the police brutality that we've been suffering for decades. And I think that the people are sick and tired of it. And we are at a tipping point in this country. And it's urgent for our white friends in particular, because you're the guys that are at the dining room table with your families and friends and nieces and nephews who may have some of these views, these racist views. Mm. And it's up to you guys to stand up and to call them out on it and to make them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And we have to make people with these racist views uncomfortable until we can weed them out. And so it's going to take, you know, African-Americans can't do it. We're the minority here. We need the majority to stand up and to take on this fight and to speak out and speak loudly about it, just the way that we have with other fights in this country. You've got corporations getting on board with other fights. You know, when we had the whole, everyone was against homosexuality, right? Mm-hmm. And all of the organizations came together. You saw a flag that represented the LGBTQT on every business storefront. You start, it just made it uncomfortable for anyone who had an alternative view. We need the same thing here. So we need every business in America. We need municipalities getting a hold of the red, black, and green flag per se, and putting that up in their windows to show the same sort of alignment and semblance with the African-American community as they had with the LGBTQ community. And maybe we can begin to break this thing down. But until we get that sort of alignment, we're working closer and closer to having more anarchy in the streets.
Victor Williams, thank you so much for your work, and we really appreciate you taking a little time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you for reaching out, and I look forward to speaking to you guys again.